on the Coyote Sports Network. From Learfield, this is the YoteCast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics, taking you inside the stories of Coyote athletes, coaches, administrators, and more. Now, here's your host, John Thayer.
Hey, what's up? How you doing? Welcome back. It's another edition of the YoteCast podcast as we get into championship season for fall sports. And, of course, winter sports are well underway at this point. Some will continue to be added to the list, but right now basketball seasons have gotten underway. Football wraps up its regular season this week at Western Illinois. Obviously, a win would lock in a top 8 seed for the FCS playoffs for South Dakota. We'll talk more about what all that seed conversation means coming up in the show today with Sam Herder, who is the senior analyst for Hero Sports when it comes to the FCS. Does a great job, and he'll join us to talk about playoff situation for South Dakota and kind of what it all means. That's coming up in the podcast today. Also on the way, Kylan Seelock. She is a volleyball player for USD. Started playing late last year, got some time, didn't play as much as she wanted early on, but got some time late and then was able to develop into a big role here this year and really has been hot lately and helped this team to a share of the Summit League title. It's amazing. Four teams have shared the Summit League regular season title because of how they finish in the standings. The top seed through tiebreakers in the Summit League volleyball tournament will be Kansas City. Omaha, the two seed, they will get Sunday off and they will prepare for action on Monday. That sets up the first round action. The first game of the day on Sunday at the Sanford Coyote Sports Center will be the 3-seed Denver against the 6-seed South Dakota State. The winner of that matchup at 2 o'clock on Sunday afternoon will be matched up with Omaha at 4 o'clock on Monday. Then it's the 4-5 matchup on Sunday at 5 o'clock Sunday evening. The 4-seed South Dakota will take on the 5-seed North Dakota State. Coyotes have beaten the Bison twice this year, once in 5 sets and once in a 3-set sweep. At home, the winner of that will advance to play at 7 o'clock on Monday against the top-seeded Ruse of Kansas City. The winners of Monday's matchups will meet Tuesday at 7 o'clock for the Summit League Volleyball Championship with the winner on to the NCAA tournament. So we'll see how the tournament plays out, but the Coyotes will enter as the 4-seed. They drop to the 4-seed after finishing in a 4-way tie for first place in the Summit League regular season. But all the action at the Sanford Coyote Sports Center in Vermilion. And you can get tickets now to that by going to goyotes.com. Single session tickets are available. So if you did not want to purchase the, if you did not want to think about purchasing the all session passes, single session tickets are now available. And you can do that at goyotes.com. So check it out. Each session is basically every day. So if you buy session tickets number one, you'll get both games on Sunday. Number two, both games on Monday. And then, of course, if you want the championship on Tuesday, you could do that as well. So it's kind of a pay-as-you-go instead of buying the all-session passes for that. So we'll keep that in mind as you get ready for the Summit League Volleyball Championship. Hopefully big crowds on hand on Sunday. And if they win Monday, to help the Coyote volleyball team energize them through the Summit League volleyball tournament. Ticket information has been released from the University of South Dakota for FCS playoffs. The Coyotes are set to qualify for the FCS playoffs for the third time in the last six seasons. And obviously, the Coyotes are hoping they get to host a playoff game. A win this week would secure a home game in round number two. Tickets will go on sale Sunday at 1 o'clock. Season ticket holders and Howling Pack members will have the first grab at them Sunday at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Any remaining tickets will be available to the general public on Wednesday at 9 a.m. So keep in mind all of that if you are getting yourself ready for some potential FCS playoff action inside the Dakota Dome. We'll know more on that Selection Sunday coming up on Sunday at 11:30 a.m. on ESPNU. All right, that's a look at volleyball and football. Obviously, exciting times right now for Coyote Athletics. We'll see if they can keep cruising here in Summit League Volleyball Championships and football on its way to an FCS playoff bye, which they've never had, trying to make history this week with a win at Western Illinois. All right, we'll talk more about the playoffs coming up in just a little bit with Sam Herder. Let's get it started with Kylan Seelock, a volleyball player for South Dakota.
Kylan, first off, congratulations on a share of the Summit League regular season title. I know for your team that has obviously been your goal to be call yourself conference champions and able to accomplish that. What did that feeling mean like when that final point happened and you knew that your team had accomplished that goal?
Well, we knew before the game what could happen if we won the game and where we would stand in the standings, and that was definitely motivation for us as we were playing out there, especially playing our rivals too. But that feeling, we all knew, we all looked at each other, we were cheering, kind of pointing at our fingers at the end of the game when we knew that we had won and we shared the title for the conference championship. But yeah, that was a really great feeling, and to be able to do that with all my teammates was amazing.
It's always a great feeling to be a part of a conference championship. What did it mean this particular year where your team got off to a very slow start in conference play? You were working through a lot of things, some inexperienced players, young players, veterans who were playing a little bit more time. There's a lot to sort out with this team, but it gets off to a slow start. Mm-hmm. People are getting a little bit nervous. The coaching staff just kept saying, be patient. Mm-hmm. We're going to be okay. How gratifying is it to get to this point in the season after where the conference year started?
I think it's a really great feeling. I think it just goes to show how resilient our team can be and that we came into practice every day working hard. No matter how the beginning of the season started, we still came to practice every day and gave it our all and knew that we could accomplish more.
You look at you individually, and you're someone who has certainly grown into a role this year. Let's go back to last year. You didn't play a lot throughout a good chunk of the season, probably not as much as you had hoped, but you came on late in the year. What was that part of your transition like to come on late in the season and really help this team get to where it did?
I think it was really hard for me to accept my role at first, being more so on the bench, but once I was given that opportunity, I definitely took it and ran with it. I gave it my all, and with the support of all my teammates there, I felt like I had the confidence to go take those big swings, and that's exactly what I did.
What was the feeling like for you then after you come on late in the season, you helped this team get to where it did, obviously to the NCAA tournament, and to be playing in the NCAA tournament after, as you said, not playing maybe as much as you had hoped early in the year?
It was a great feeling, and that's like the big stage where everyone wants to play. That was definitely like fulfilling my dreams that I had as a little girl. I wanted to play college volleyball. I wanted to get to the big stage and do all of those things, and just to be able to be in that moment and to be present and just to like see the surroundings and all my family and the fans, all of our South Dakota fans that were able to make it to the game. It was just an amazing feeling, all the support and just the adrenaline on the court.
Last year, you were able to play alongside Elizabeth Junkie, who's one of the great players to play here, and you've kind of taken over her role, playing in a very effective manner. How much were you able to learn from someone like that, an upperclassman who had gone through a lot of success and obviously dealt with that injury in the NCAA tournament, but how much were you able to learn from her?
I was able to learn a lot from her. She is honestly one of my biggest inspirations, and I've told that to her. I've had multiple conversations with her, and I think she's definitely helped with my confidence and just being able to play like I play and not trying to do more than I can do, but just to play hard every day and give it my all.
You keep talking about playing hard and giving it your all. What has been something that you've been focused on over the last year, a little over a year, that has helped you get to where you're, this success you're having right now?
I would say just managing in times that the sets aren't quite there or I'm not given a perfect set by like an out-of-system ball or anything like that, but just getting my feet to the ball so I can actually take those big swings. And in doing so, I've gained the confidence that I can swing and hit those balls, and I think that's given me confidence in other areas of the game as well.
How much work goes into trying to time up those big swings? Because everybody, fans love the big, giant swing, and it all has to work perfectly for it to happen. How much work goes into the timing?
I think it's a whole team effort, to be honest. When the pass is there and we are able to get a good set and the set is there, us as hitters, we just have to make sure we are patient on the set. Sometimes you might get a little giddy and anxious and want to just go fast in there and swing at it, but we really have to make sure we're staying patient and waiting on that first step so we can really accelerate into the ball.
Do you have a kill that right now is the most memorable to you?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head right now.
What's your favorite approach to a swing? I know that, you know, sometimes there'll be a slide attack. Sometimes you have to hit it from the back row, and sometimes you get up there and really crank on one. What's your favorite setup?
My favorite swing is definitely the rip ball that we run, which is just a little bit inside the court. That's definitely my favorite.
I know somebody asked Coach Williamson on our radio show on Monday night if they like high arcing sets or quick sets. How do you adjust?
I would say that here at South Dakota, we kind of run a little higher pace of an offense, and I think that works well for us because we are given time to get up, and when we can get up, we can see where the blockers are at and try to hit around and tool them if need be. But sometimes running a faster offense, it's a little hard to either beat the block or like get the ball around the block.
What has the transition been like for you from going to high school volleyball into this level, which is obviously played at a little higher pace?
I would say it's been a really fun transition. It wasn't easy at the beginning, but Coach Leanne was definitely very patient with me and helping with transitioning into this offense and just this level of play. But I was a part of some, I would say, fairly decent teams in high school and in club. I have a lot of teammates who have gone off to big schools and are still doing big things. So I would say that I still was playing at a really high level before I got here, but it definitely was a transition coming here.
If you look at your season, you had moments throughout the season, but you've been playing at a really high level lately. What has gotten comfortable for you enough, or what has changed or helped that has just allowed you to find that rhythm?
I would say just staying present and not focusing so much on how my body's feeling all the time, because I do get very, very sore. But just being able to play through it and knowing that my teammates have my back, I think that the support and the love that we have for each other has only grown throughout the season. And I'm sure you guys can see that as an outside person watching in. But yeah, it's been really great.
I'm glad you talked about the body being sore, because the grind of a season is great, especially when you get through a couple of these weeks that you're coming off of where you guys crammed in a lot of matches in a short amount of time. How do you try to recover your body quickly, especially on the short turnarounds, to get it ready and get out there feeling as good as you can?
I think a few of us on the team really enjoy taking the ice baths, even though they're really, really cold, especially in this cold weather. But that definitely helps. And our trainer, Heather, does a really good job of staying on top of either cupping or massaging or anything that we need. So after game days, we always normally have a treatment day, and I definitely take full advantage of that.
What's your favorite? Do you like the cupping? Do you like the ice bath more, or does it kind of all work together?
I think I like the cupping more. It just relaxes my muscles a little bit. But the cold tub is a little, you have to be a brave soul for that sometimes.
Got to be a little tough. I think, you know, sometimes people see volleyball players, and obviously your shoulders are always showing, and people can see those dark rings and those circles on your arms.
Yeah.
They don't bother you, though, do they?
They do not, most of the time. Sometimes they're a little tender and sore, but normally doesn't last too long.
You look at this season, and you talked about the love for each other, and this team has grown throughout the course of the year. How would you assess the year with this group and the growth that it's had? You've got, like we said, there's some young players who have stepped up, some veterans who have stepped into a bigger role. It took some time to gel. How would you assess this season?
I think our team has done a very good job of adapting to what or the people that we have on the court, no matter who it is. I think that we're able to give each other the confidence on the court no matter who's out there. And we practice every day with different people about like around us. So I think that that definitely helps. Like, we're constantly like around each other, pushing each other to be better. And I think that helps on the court.
When you look at the opportunity coming up now ahead of you, obviously the goal is to win the Summit League tournament. You get to try that right here at home. How special is that to know that this team, you know, earned the opportunity to host this tournament? And how excited are you to have it at home?
I am absolutely excited, and I think the whole team is. Having the home court advantage is definitely great, especially for us, because we love our fans. We love the environment of playing at home. I think we definitely have that extra edge to us when we play here, and so I think we definitely have that extra motivation to go win it here.
Obviously, you've been entrenched in volleyball, and it's your life right now because you're in season, and you hope that's going for a while. How about when you're not playing volleyball? What other interests and hobbies do you have?
Right now, during season, of course, it's a lot of volleyball, but I would say school is also a big thing. I have a lot of homework and papers I have to do constantly, but also like to hang out with either like my teammates or my other friends that I have from here, so that's fun too.
You know, people talk about film watching a lot in sports. Do you watch a lot of film in volleyball? Coach Leanne talks a lot about there's some film, and sometimes we're just worried about our side of the net and what we can control. How much film watching do you do?
I would say I do quite a bit of film watching, to be honest. I really like to be able to watch myself back and see how I'm hitting the ball, because in the moment, sometimes I can't exactly see like where I'm, like the angles I need to hit or something like that. So I kind of like to watch it back. I'm not going to lie, I definitely watched the game from last night after we got back. I don't think I went to bed till like 3 a.m.
Let me guess, you're saving all those big kills that you have all year so you can put a highlight reel together.
No, I just like to watch them back because it kind of just gives me the extra confidence knowing that I can do that in the next game as well.
What's the most special thing about this group?
I think that just the love that we have for each other. No matter the class or whatever, I think that we love each other and we support each other through anything, whether it's on the volleyball court or off the volleyball court.
I know you've seen great fan support, and obviously with the Summit League tournament coming up, a lot of those fans will be really excited. For those who haven't bought their passes, why should they come out and watch this team?
You guys should come out and watch this team because we are going to do some big things here in Vermilion during this conference tournament. We are on a win streak right now, and I think that we have a lot of motivation, and the more fans that we get, the louder the arena gets, it will just give us that extra edge.
All right, Kylan, thanks for the time. Really appreciate it. Good luck in the tournament.
Thank you.
She's Kylan Seelock, a volleyball player for the University of South Dakota. Her and the Coyotes getting set for the Summit League tournament. They're the 4 seed hosting the tournament this year by virtue of winning the league title, regular season title, last season. Cheer them on this week, Sunday at 5 o'clock. Monday, hopefully, at 7. If they win on Sunday, they'll play Monday at 7 o'clock. And then the championship, of course, is on Tuesday. We're gearing up for the final week of the regular season in the FCS, and of course that means coming up on Sunday, Selection Sunday for the FCS playoff field, which will announce the bracket for the upcoming FCS playoffs. Of course, round number one gets underway on Thanksgiving. Here to help us talk through different scenarios and possibilities that we look ahead, senior FCS analyst for Hero Sports, Sam Herder. Sam, great to have you. Appreciate you taking the time. I know it's been awful busy for you, but this is the exciting time for guys like you when we get closer and closer to that Selection Sunday.
Yeah, it's a blast. And, you know, the season goes by really quick, but when we get to this point, now is when we start talking about, you know, the overall resumes. And you know, we pull up a loss that happened in September or a big win that happened in early October, and we all kind of put it all together and look at the resumes and try to do our best to project what the playoff committee is going to do, even though, you know, sometimes that can be difficult to put your mind into what the committee will do, but it's fun to at least try to take a stab at it.
You've done a great job analyzing over the years and helping yourself understand what goes into these processes. That seems to be how, in part, you've understood how to put together your projections, but you also ask a lot of questions. And I thought, you know, a few weeks ago, one of the big ones that was asked and started to become more of the conversation is the conversation on non-Division I wins and how that maybe has changed, not changed for the committee, but changed in our minds.
Yeah, it was one of the, I guess, biggest misconceptions in the FCS for a number of years. Not exactly sure how it happened. You know, for a long time, you know, us in the, you know, media, whether it's local, national, even some, I know, FCS athletic departments thought this as well, and they called it non-Division I wins non-counters, which basically means they don't count on your playoff resume. And if you're 8-3 with a Division II win, you're really a 7-win team in the eyes of the playoff committee. We thought that for quite some time, and it turns out that is not the case, and it hasn't been the case for several years. And for whatever reason, no one has ever corrected us. No one has ever corrected. Idaho, you know, had a press release during the summer when they rescheduled a game, a D2 game, and switched it to a Division I game. They even wrote it in their press release that D2 games are non-counters, and that's why we switched out this game. And no one bothered to correct them either. So finally got the correction, you know, from it, from the NCAA earlier this season. I did a little article on it, but I was confused on why it took this long to get a correction out there, I guess.
Before we dive into this year's playoff field, one of the conversations that I know was out there a lot this summer, the spring into the summer, and people are still wondering, are we any closer to true seeding a bracket in the FCS?
Yeah, so it's looking promising that it can happen for next season. The proposal is basically to keep the playoff bracket at 24 teams still. For a little bit, they were talking about expanding the playoff bracket and moving it up to 28 teams or 32 teams. The commissioners eventually landed on the idea of let's keep it at 24 teams, but if we can seed more teams, that would just make it more of a national bracket. There's less regionalization because, I mean, technically right now the ninth best team and the 10th best team in the bracket could get paired up, you know, just because they're unseeded teams and, you know, they kind of match things up regionally. And that's, you know, obviously not very fair and doesn't make it a true national bracket. It was close to happening this season as far as seeding 16 teams within the 24-team bracket. They got multiple approvals for it, including the Division I Council. But once it got to I can't remember specifically what it's called, but it's basically the finance committee for the NCAA. Once it got to them, they basically disapproved, you know, any expansions of brackets or seeds for the time being, just because the revenue was overall flat for the NCAA. But they're hoping with some new revenue coming in for next season, they can go about seeding 16 teams in the 24-team bracket, which would essentially be, you know, the top 8 seeds still get a first round bye. But then seeds 9 through 16 automatically get a first-round home game instead of having to bid to host. And then those teams 9 through 16 would get matched up with the pool of teams 17 to 24. Those matchups would still probably be based off of regionalization, but still the more seeds you can see, the less regionalized it's going to be. And so if they do get this change over the finish line for next season, I think it's going to really, really help the playoff bracket.
Well, and it would help the idea that you can earn a playoff home game without opening up the checkbook too much, even though, as we know from last year, that's not always the case. You open up the checkbook and you still might go on the road. All right, let's get to this year's playoff situation. And for South Dakota, obviously our fans are enjoying the best season South Dakota's ever had at Division I. Never had 8 wins, never had 6 wins in the Missouri Valley Football Conference. That has happened. The Coyotes are a win away, we think, from a seed, a top 8 seed in the FCS playoffs. Where do you think South Dakota could end up here, assuming that they're able to go get a win on Saturday?
Yeah, with a win, you know, I would be surprised if South Dakota is outside the top 4 seeds. You know, I really think they're going to be most likely, honestly, the number 4 seed. You know, obviously South Dakota State is going to be the 1 seed. Furman and the winner of the Montana versus Montana State game, those are probably going to be the 2 and 3 seeds in whatever order. And then South Dakota, you know, could probably land at that 4 spot. I don't see like a Delaware, if they beat Villanova, I don't see Delaware's resume jumping South Dakota. And so I think the 4 spot, you know, is probably where the Yotes are going to land, even though I do, when I'm looking at the resumes, it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, USD jumps Furman for that number 3 seed, because South Dakota would have a really, really good resume. 9-2 overall, 9-1 versus the FCS, 4 ranked wins. 3 of those wins were against top 10 teams. You know, the strength of schedule is going to be in the top 20 for South Dakota. So that's a really good resume. The only reason I kind of am doubtful that South Dakota would jump Furman or Montana State, I should say, is because Montana and Montana State are already, you know, pretty highly ranked. And whoever wins that game, that's going to be one more top 5 win for whoever it is. And so I think they'll be top 3. Furman, you know, on paper resume actually isn't as good as South Dakota's resume. But Furman is number 2 currently in both national polls. The committee doesn't always necessarily mirror what the national polls say, but, you know, sometimes it kind of the line of thinking for the playoff committee and national poll voters, you know, kind of are along the same line. And so that's why I kind of struggle to see South Dakota jumping either one of those teams. But, you know, a top four seed at least seems very likely.
We hear so much about regionalization for the FCS playoff bracket, and a lot of it makes sense. Are the top eight seeds, do you feel like, Sam, are they true top eight seeds? Or let's say they kind of put South Dakota and Furman on the same line, and they look down the road and say, if these teams keep winning, South Dakota could be a bus trip to South Dakota State. We'll put them as the four. Do they regionalize that far down the line?
They do not know. And how the seeding process works, you know, doesn't allow for them to kind of have that mindset and shuffle things around. You know, essentially, you know, how it works is once they have to form the 24-team field, just overall with 24 teams, it's kind of a voting process to get the 14 at-large bids, you know, into the field along with the 10 auto bids. And then once they have the 24 teams in, it's, okay, these are the 24 teams that are going to be in our bracket. They now, the playoff committee then goes into an individual voting process where each committee member individually and privately votes for who they think, you know, should be seeds. And then once those votes are in, they basically go on a big board. You know, these are, you know, 12 teams or whatever that got votes for the eight seeds. Okay, here are the 12. Everyone vote again for your top eight, 1 through 8. And then it kind of, the whatever system they use kind of spits out, you know, just like a kind of a normal top 25 that they spit out. Here's the top eight through voting points. And then once that 1 through 8 order is set, they can adjust it. And so it's not really a groupthink thing from the playoff committee where they go, okay, yeah, let's avoid putting Montana and Montana State at 2 and 7, or let's avoid putting South Dakota State at 1, South Dakota 4, North Dakota State at 8. Let's avoid that. Now, individual committee members can kind of have that mindset. You know, they don't want to, you know, order things that way, but it's all, you know, kind of individual voting. And then it spits out the total. And then once the 1 through 8 order is set, they can't really readjust things from there. So the regionalization, when it comes to seeds, that doesn't play a part in how it's ordered.
Well, it's always interesting because, you know, you hear so much about regionalization and all of that. So the top eight seeds get set, and then we go from there. Let's talk about South Dakota just a little bit more for this week. Let's say goofy things happen in Macomb, Illinois, and South Dakota finds itself on the wrong end of that game. And I know I'm not supposed to ask that question, but here we are. Is there still an outside chance South Dakota would get a top eight seed, or is it dependent on winning this week?
I think even with the loss, and, you know, no offense to Western, but that would be a pretty bad loss if USD were to lose that game. But even with the loss, I still think the Yotes will be a seed. You know, obviously wouldn't be a top four seed. Could potentially be for USD knocked back to the 7 or 8 seed maybe, but you would still have an 8-3 overall record, 8-2 versus the FCS. I mean, there's still a high number of ranked wins. Again, 4 ranked wins. NDSU, Southern Illinois, UND, you know, especially were top 10 teams, you know, at that time. So that's still a really good resume, in my opinion. I still think 8-3 USD would be seeded. But, you know, that could be the 8 seed, and all of a sudden you're matched up with South Dakota State in the quarterfinals instead of the semifinals, you know, potentially. And so, you know, obviously the Yotes want to handle business here and not be put in this scenario.
Don't leave it up to a bunch of people sitting around a table, right? Just go win
a football game.
Oh, yep. Okay, so beyond that, once they get the top 8 set, then they order in their the rest of the field. Is this – it can't be entirely regional because at some point teams are going to have to travel. What goes into the mindset next? Do they, in their minds, do you think, seed any of the teams following the top 8 and kind of make matchups, or is it all just how can we save money? How can we keep the cost low?
Yeah, it's – They have their parameters, you know, from the NCAA. And so it's hard for them to, I mean, ideally, yeah, they would match up the ninth best team who just missed the seed against, you know, the 24th team, for example. But, you know, ideally they do that, and sometimes they try to do that. But really what they try to do, because the NCAA, you know, runs this postseason tournament, they handle all the travel costs. And it's the job of the playoff committee to try to find as many bus trips as possible, which any first round matchups or technically second round matchups as well. Any matchups between two teams that are within 400 miles of each other, you know, that's a bus trip. And so the playoff committee is kind of tasked with finding as many bus trips, you know, as possible for the first round. Now there are things in place where regular season matchups, regular season rematches can't happen in the first round. Like, for example, NDSU and UND, they can't play in the first rounds, even though they're really close to each other because they played in the regular season. But, you know, NDSU and Youngstown State could be matched up because even though they're from the same conference, they didn't play each other during the regular season. And so, you know, those type of matchups can happen. And then so teams are kind of paired up as regionally as possible. You know, obviously sometimes that's not always possible to have so many bus trips. And so, yeah, there are scenarios where maybe an East Coast team goes to Texas or a Texas team goes to California, for example. But they try to pair things up as regionally as possible. And then once they have, you know, the first round matchup set, they kind of put those in the same pod with the seed again, based off of regionalization. And so, you know, if you're South Dakota, if you're South Dakota State, if you're Montana State, there's probably a good chance that one of those teams is going to see NDSU, you know, assuming the Bison don't get a seed, they're going to see an NDSU team, or they'll see a UND team, assuming they win in the first round, just because they're kind of based again off of geography.
You look at the Missouri Valley Football Conference, and this, quite honestly, and maybe this is my bias being in the league, it feels like a year where seven teams legitimately could get into the playoffs and could certainly win games in the playoffs. That doesn't feel like it's going to happen. It feels like six is the ceiling. Maybe it's five. I know it was five in your latest projection that you have on Hero Sports, Sam. Where are we at with the Missouri Valley Football Conference? There are a lot of big games in the final regular season weekend that could determine which teams are in number one and how many teams get in from our conference.
Yeah, there's two huge matchups, especially with North Dakota State going to Northern Iowa. You know, if Northern Iowa wins that game, they would finish 7-4. Northern Iowa would get in this scenario. I still think the Bison, even if they do lose, they would be 7-4, but they have a head-to-head win over Southern Illinois, who's another 7-4 potential team. I still think the Bison would be in even with the loss. Now, if NDSU wins, they are for sure in and potentially a seed, and Northern Iowa is knocked to the wrong side of the bubble at 6-5. You also have Illinois State going to UND. Both teams are 6-4. And so, you know, kind of the magic number to hit for a Valley team for strong playoff consideration is 7 Division I wins. You know, so the winner here obviously gets to 7-4, and the loser gets knocked out at 7-5 or 6-5. I think UND, if they win, they are for sure going to be in at 7-4 because they have that head-to-head win over NDSU. You know, Illinois State, if they win, I don't know if a 7-4 Illinois State team is going to make it in, just because they don't. Besides the UND potential win, they don't really have any other wins that, you know, stand out on their resume. They haven't really been ranked a whole lot this year. And so even though Illinois State, if they do get this win, they might end up getting left out, you know, on the bracket. And then, you know, there's Southern Illinois and Youngstown State. They need to handle business. If they do, they both finish 7-4. They're kind of sitting and waiting to see what happens in the Valley and across the country. You know, they're both probably hoping that Northern Iowa loses. They're both hoping that UND loses, so both of those teams get knocked out. And then there's plenty of other bubble teams that they'll be paying attention to as well, hoping they get knocked off.
Obviously, Southern Illinois does have an FBS win. That feels like it got USD South Dakota into the playoffs in 2017, beating Bowling Green that particular year, and I think going 4-4, if I remember right, in the league that year. Southern Illinois, is that their hope right now? They need some help, and they're hoping that FBS win carries some weight?
Yeah, Southern Illinois and Youngstown State, I honestly think, are kind of nervous right now, especially, I mean, NC Central has kind of popped onto the at-large radar out of the MEAC because they got upset last week. And so that's, you know, potentially one less at-large bid to go around. And it'll be interesting because if the Valley does get six bids in, you know, it likely would come down to Southern Illinois or Youngstown State, you know, assuming UND also wins, assuming, you know, Northern Iowa beats NDSU in this scenario. You know, you could have a situation where for that sixth bid from the Valley, it could come between Southern Illinois and Youngstown State. And that would be fascinating because Southern Illinois has the better overall resume at 7-4. They have that FBS win. They also beat Austin Peay, and Austin Peay has a strong chance to finish this year 9-2. So those are two good wins. But Youngstown State is also going to be 7-4, and they have a 31-3 head-to-head win over Southern Illinois. And so, would the committee value overall resume, or would they value same record but head-to-head win for Youngstown State? And so that could be a fascinating scenario. There's also, you know, a scenario where both teams just end up getting left at home and the Valley only gets five or so teams in.
Are they ever going to let you sit in on the conversation and just soak it all in, or what?
So I actually asked, I can't remember if it was 2 years ago or last year, you know, I asked if I could sit in on it, and I wouldn't like share, oh, you know, this committee member said this about this team, or they all said this about this team. It would just be, you know, sit in the corner and just evaluate how they go about doing things. That was turned down, which I kind of understand. You know, the reason was, you know, the committee members, you know, want to have the freedom of knowing for sure whatever said, you know, in that room is kept in that room. And if there's a media person in there, you know, they could, you know, maybe let it slip that, you know, they said this or they said that. So I've attempted to get into that room, but unfortunately that was denied.
Last thing for you, Sam, what do you think of the overall playoff field right now? Or just as you look at where you have the projections, it looks like South Dakota State's going to be an awful difficult team to beat. They are built extremely well. And I know a couple of teams that we're talking about here have had an opportunity at them. And so far they've beaten everybody. But what do you think of the overall field and where we're at right now in FCS football?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly feels like it is the Jackrabbits versus the field. I mean, they have seven ranked wins, you know, this season, and I want to say five of them were by at least three scores. And so they got pushed by Montana State, and, you know, the Bobcats had a great argument to win that game. South Dakota State also got pushed pretty well, you know, on the road at Southern Illinois. And so it's not I think they're going to, you know, they're going to go on and win the national title, but I don't think they're going to be beating every single team in the bracket 50-0. They'll get pushed and all that, but it seems like it's going to be Jack's, you know, on that Toyota Field stage and hoisting up the trophy. But, you know, it is a 2014 bracket. You have to win, you know, four times to win the national title, or five times if you're an unseeded team. And so you never know. And, you know, it'll just be fascinating to see if South Dakota State does make it to Frisco, who emerges to face them. You know, can a Furman team, you know, kind of overcome some doubters and prove they are the second best team in the FCS? Is it one of the Montana teams? You know, can Idaho kind of get hot again and make a run, just depending on where the bracket gets set up? And so it'll be an interesting bracket, and we'll see who's left standing, you know, at the end. But you know, that's the great part about the FCS, obviously, is you got to win multiple games to be able to hoist up that trophy.
Exciting times. There's no doubt. Final week of the regular season coming up. Selection Sunday on ESPNU, set for Sunday at 11:30 a.m. Sam Herder joining us here to break down the potential playoff field. Sam, great stuff. Thanks so much for the time. Really appreciate it. And thanks for all you do covering FCS football. I know so many people appreciate your work and others to continue to highlight our level and appreciate what you do.
Yeah, thank you, and I appreciate you having me on.
He's Sam Herder, a senior FCS analyst for Hero Sports. Check out all the work that Sam does a tremendous job keeping everybody up to date with what's going on in FCS along the national picture, and so we're glad to have his time and talk a little more in-depth with what is going on for the FCS playoffs. All right, before we wrap things up, let's take a look at what's going on in Coyote Athletics. On Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, the South Dakota swimming and diving teams are in action at the Augustana Invite in Sioux Falls at the Midco Aquatic Center. So they'll be in action for those days. Men's basketball back in action on Friday afternoon. They're in Glendale, Arizona for the Arizona tip-off. They'll take on Virginia Military Institute in game one. The Coyote men will also play on Saturday against either Purdue, Fort Wayne, or Northern Arizona. Tip-off time to be determined. That depends if they win or lose on Friday. Football play at Western Illinois, final game of the regular season. They will try to wrap it up with a victory and get to 9 wins in the regular season. Women's basketball will play its first game in the Bahamas on Saturday. They'll play at 6:30 at night against DePaul in the battle for Atlantis. And, of course, that tournament runs Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. So depending on wins and losses will determine their opponent and their time of playing in the battle for Atlantis. We know on Sunday they will take on either Michigan or Middle Tennessee, so we'll keep an eye on things there. Volleyball, of course, is in action on Sunday in the Summit League Volleyball Tournament. 5 o'clock is the start time for the Coyotes. They'll take on NDSU. There is, of course, the game at 2 o'clock between Denver and South Dakota State. Women's basketball back in action on Monday. They will take on, it depends how they go through the bracket of the battle for Atlantis, but they will play again on Monday, so we'll keep an eye on how things unfold there. Wednesday, right before Thanksgiving, it's a 1 o'clock in the afternoon game for men's basketball. They'll take on Northland College right before Thanksgiving, so we'll have that for you on the Coyote Sports Network, but it is men's basketball against Northland College on Wednesday at 1 o'clock. That's what's going on in Coyote Athletics. For schedule information, ticket information, and more, visit goyotes.com. That's it for us this week. I'm John Thayer. Have a great rest of your week. Stay safe and go Yotes.
Thanks for listening to YoteCast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation on the Coyote Sports Network.